author of The Infinite Jest, David Foster Wallace, killed himself in 2008, but he had one more book left in him, a conversation with a loyal editor who pieced together and published the unfinished novel, The Pale King. The editor and The Pale King, after the morning's top news stories.
You're listening to The Takeaway from Public Radio International and WNYC in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Radio Boston.
Good morning. Celeste Headlee here with John Hockenberry. Let's take a look at our headlines now. It is 47 minutes after the hour. The House and Senate are expected to pass a budget by midweek that will fund the federal government through September. The Republicans and Democrats avoided a government shutdown in the 11th hour on Friday. That's an agreed-to budget deal will be put down on paper today on Capitol Hill. It calls for more than $38 billion in spending cuts. Those cuts come amid news that the United States spends more on defense than all the other countries in the world combined. The U.S. increased defense spending by nearly 3% last year to $698 billion. That's six times as much as China and up 81% since 2001. You're listening to The Takeaway. You can follow us on Twitter at The Takeaway.
When David Foster Wallace, celebrated author of Infinite Jest, took his own life in September of 2008, he left behind reams of unfinished work and left his readers dreaming of that voice that brought so much joy and magic to the page.
Here's this thing where it's going to sound sappy to you. I have this unbelievably, like, five-year-old's belief that art is just absolutely magic and that good art can do things that nothing else in the solar system can do.
That's David Foster Wallace speaking to journalist David Lipsky back in 1996. And this week, one of those Wallace dreams comes true as The Pale King is released from Wallace's longtime publisher, Little Brown. The book is unfinished and was assembled from the raggedy genius that defined Wallace and that longtime editor Michael Peach found when he decided to transform the unfinished pages into a finished book. Peach came into our studios last week to talk about how emotional it is for an editor to bring a book into the world when its author is gone. The longtime executive editor and publisher at Little Brown has worked with many authors, including Alice Siebold, David Sedaris, and Keith Richards, as well as David Foster Wallace.
The editor's job is to be the writer's perfect reader and a reader who the author trusts to help him make the book as great as it can. In David's case, he came to me because he knew that he was writing something with Infinite Jest, his great novel,
sure.
Something really, really long and really challenging to people's comprehension. And he somehow had decided that I was someone that he would listen to when I challenged him. And our task that we agreed on together was to make that book as short as it could be and still be itself. So my job was to go through and just point out anything that I thought could come out without the book kind of collapsing in on itself. And to point out the places where it became just incomprehensible, and to talk about why it is becoming too slow or too boring or too confusing that I thought readers might just finally throw it against the wall. So that was the nature of our back and forth.
The novel, The Infinite Jest, was long when it came out, but it was a huge success, and it immediately posed the question, says Peach, what's next?
Yes, where's your next 1,400-page masterpiece, David? That was a question that I know he was troubled by. He began work on another novel not long after he finished Infinite Jest.
Is The Pale King the answer to the question of what comes next?
The Pale King is the novel he'd been working on for all those years. I first saw it after he died, 2-3 months after he died, 4 months, January of 2009. I was invited to come to the home he shared with his wife, Karen Green, look with her and Bonnie at what they had found in his office when they finally went in to look at his office after he died. And what they found was on his desk a sheaf of pages, about 200 pages. And then as they went through his office, they found masses and masses of material, literally almost 3,000 pages ultimately of typescripts, handwritten drafts, you know, old floppy disks, just this massive material. He'd been writing through many generations of computer technology on this book, hundreds of thousands of words of his writing, some of it first draft writing, and sometimes I found when I took this material home to absorb it and read it over time, I found seven drafts of one chapter from the first handwritten note up through the final, the latest version of it, And some chapters that were literally still handwritten, the only thing that existed was a handwritten first draft. And about 20% of the book is made up from material he had not even typed yet. But he'd written it with this extraordinary vividness. I mean, he'd carved so deep into this mountainside. He was building a world, and he had created it and populated it and set in motion all these amazing plot elements. And my challenge was to take it all in and find the pieces that cohered and that told a story.
Did it surprise you how amazingly drawn into this utterly boring world of the IRS that his words create?
Well, that is David's genius. That is David's genius. He had written a lot of essays and talked often about wanting to write a novel that connected with real people's emotional, true daily lives, not to write fiction that was ironic or postmodern or weird, you know, or anything but helpful but meaningful and true. What he decided that the great challenge, the thing he wanted to focus on, the reason he chose to write a book set at the IRS, he wanted to focus on the fact that much of life is routine, that routine is hard, that we go to the same job every day. Many people go face the same set of, you know, drive down the same streets every day. He wanted to look at the stuff that most writers ignore and cut away from. Let's look in the face of what people call boring and find, you know, this is actually where meaning lives. This is where you ultimately connect to bliss and joy and love, is by navigating these things, understanding them, mastering them. So he was staring in the face of an abyss to find real meaning. I mean, he set, and I think the greatest challenge I've ever seen a writer take on. And he did it masterfully, and he made a book that's absolutely compelling out of those materials.
So how emotional experience was it to feel called once again as David Foster Wallace's editor to finish a job that he couldn't finish in his lifetime?
My first response was the opposite of what I expected. It was when I read the first pages, I was still grieving. It was his death was a great, great loss for everyone who knew him. The first words I read were, "Author here," and the person speaking was a character named David Foster Wallace. And suddenly there was David on the page, describing himself. And I felt like it was kind of unexpectedly joyful, because I felt like I was in his presence. He had made himself anew, alive. But it was hard. It was also very, 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 very hard to see in these pages him staring in the face of very difficult subjects. Sometimes to be writing about grief, to be writing about fear of death.
Do you think you could have helped him if you were involved in the process earlier? Stare at that face. Find his way through it.
Everyone who I think is near a suicide has thoughts like that, and I just I really can't answer. He kept his depression, his medical condition private. I did not know he was medicated. I did not know he was depressed. I knew from his work he knew a lot about extreme mental states and great, great pain, but he always wrote. He always had such control and such humor in everything he wrote, and he was writing so constantly that I did not understand at all how unwell he was.
How important is this book, aside from completing the body of work of David Foster Wallace?
I mean, it's hard for me to be objective about it, but I think it is an enormous accomplishment. Even unfinished, I think it's one of the great novels an American writer has ever written. I think it stands with Twain. I think he's a great, David Wallace is one of the great, brilliant, funny writers who's ever lived.
And on some level, you're one of the great editors.
Well, that's...
Not to blow your horn, but yeah. This relationship for all of us budding authors out there, it's important to know that it exists. Because the editor's going away.
There is a popular idea that the editor's going away. I don't believe it's true. I know a lot of my friends are editors, and this devotion to writing is still there.
Well, before we send you back to behind the curtain, where you belong, Michael Peach, you know, congratulations on this, Pale King. It is extraordinary. Do you ever think to yourself, in your own career, David Foster Wallace? Keith Richards, you've met some characters.
I've had enormous delight in working with writers. Writers to me are the heroes of the ages. They are the people who encapsulate knowledge and beauty and wisdom and pass it on for all time. What a privilege to get to work with them.
Well, we're grateful that you're one of the gatekeepers.
Thank you.
Michael Peach, thank you so much. Publisher Little Brown and Company, and responsible for us seeing, finally, the posthumous work of David Foster Wallace, The Pale King. Thank you.
Thank you.
And you had a chance to read the book.
It is quite amazing. It is. I mean, I don't know if it ranks up there with Twain. I'm not finished with it yet. But to create a world in the utter banality of the IRS and to make it riveting, I mean, truly over the top.
But it adds to it that this is posthumous, that this is the voice of...
It's painful to read. But he does speak so vividly. Alive or dead, David Foster Wallace is, for my money, one of the most vivid authors there is.
Well, you can get more about that and hear an earlier interview about David Foster Wallace at our website, thetakeaway.org. Blog posts, lots of things there. We want to send out special thanks to one of the people that helps the show get on the air every day. Kristen Meinzer helped put together the interview you just heard. She's also the co-host of our podcast, Movie Date. You can download that at thetakeaway.org. I'm Celeste Headlee.
And I'm John Hockenberry. Our thanks to Michael Peach over at Little Brown. This is The Takeaway.